This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, brought to you by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network at sevillepodcast.com.
Joining me on the long line is Victoria Cochran, an attorney who is a mental health and criminal justice partnership advocate. She also serves on the Commission on Mental Health and Law Reform here in Virginia, and she is the governor's appointee and chair of the State Board of Mental Health. Good afternoon, Victoria.
Hello, Coy. Thanks so much for having me on the program.
Oh, absolutely. I've been looking forward to it. You're the one person out there who can make sense of all of this for us, because I'm certainly no expert. I will say, you know, I had a child who was diagnosed with autism, and boy, that really forces you to move along a learning curve rather quickly when it comes to special needs children and special education and all those stuff. But I am no expert when it comes to all of the stuff that you work with on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, we as a country, as a result of tech, we're sort of forced to take a look at these issues because oftentimes, and I'm sure you would agree, we don't think about them enough, and we certainly don't put enough money towards addressing these issues.
I think you make really great points, Coy, although I will say that it takes more than any one person to understand the complexities of the system, the issues, the people involved in mental health treatment and provision of services, and the people with mental illness who try and navigate the system. I'll be glad to illuminate what parts of it that I can, but there are a lot of complexities, and there are a lot of organizations in Virginia right now, both predating the Virginia Tech incident and since the Virginia Tech incident, that are really focusing a lot of expertise and time and investing resources in trying to understand all of the things that might have come together to cause that terrible tragedy in my own hometown.
Yeah, and Roanoke, of course.
In Blacksburg.
Blacksburg, yeah. Yes, I'm sorry. Victoria, you know, the newspapers said that Cho had fallen through the cracks. Can you shed some light on that for us? Did he really fall through the cracks? And if so, how did he, and how could that have been averted? Because we certainly don't want something like that happening again.
Well, I think there are a lot of things at play in trying to look at that. And I've heard some people say perhaps it wasn't so much that he fell through the cracks so much as he crawled into them. And so we have to look at that, too. I think to second guess what really happened is probably inappropriate at this point. I'm very much looking forward to seeing the full Virginia Tech Review Panel report. I think it'll be released on Thursday. And they've done a great deal of work in digging into the history of this young man, his interactions both with the school system, I guess in Fairfax County where he grew up after moving here, and then in college and with our mental health system. I think it was, in some ways, just a terrible alignment of the stars and planets. And in some ways, there are things that could have been adjusted to make that alignment different. Whether any of that would have prevented what happened is very hard to tell. I think what's really important is that the Commission on Mental Health Law Reform that the Chief Justice started back in October of last year, the Virginia Tech Review Panel, the Health, Welfare, and Institutions Committee of the Virginia Legislature, the Courts of Justice Committee, many, many governmental and private organizations are really taking a hard look at the total systems to try and see where we need to make improvements, to try to understand what happened, and hopefully all to the benefit of both individuals with mental illness and the community in which they live. And walking the fine line of protecting everyone's interests is going to be an interesting outcome of all of these studies and actions by these various groups that I've mentioned.
My guest is Victoria Cochran. She is a chair of the State Board of Mental Health here in the Commonwealth. Victoria, imagine that you're the governor of Virginia. What do we need to do? What is it that we need to do? Like the top priorities that we need to do in Virginia to address what is my understanding, the little research that I've done, some serious deficiencies with how we as a state deal with mental health and violence.
Well, and interesting you should put it that way, Coy, because the correlation that is made in many people's minds between mental illness and violence is one that I think is overstated. In fact, studies show that people with mental illness are no more likely to commit violent crime than the general population. There's an increased risk factor for violence when a co-occurring substance use disorder is brought in, but that also increases the risk factor in the general population, though not to as great an extent. But I guess if I were governor, and quite frankly, I think that that's taking a great leap of faith, if I had a position of leadership where I could focus change, I would really say that we need to look at identifying, intervening, and hopefully preventing the development and greater impact of mental illness at an earlier time. Intervention and identification of individuals with mental illness is really key. And where that happens is in the community. And once that happens, once that identification is made through our school systems, through really making people aware of the kinds of behaviors and symptoms to look for that might indicate someone is developing a serious mental illness, we then need to have in place, and we need to support financially and through our policies, the funding of community-based treatment programs that will allow us to prevent the need for escalated care and emergency care and the kind of crisis care that is really where all of our focus is now. And so that's what I would focus on, and that's what I hope we will see some of. And it's certainly what I'm hearing in discussions with the Commission on Mental Health Law Reform, as I speak with people in communities and many localities are being very assertive and have been for a while in trying to develop the appropriate outreach programs, but everyone is strapped in terms of funding those. And so the way I like to say it is, you know, are you going to pay a nickel now for the prevention, or are you going to pay $100 in 10 years for not having spent that nickel?
Victoria Cochran serves on the Virginia Commission on Mental Health Law Reform, and she's the chair of the State Board of Mental Health. Victoria, where does Virginia rank in terms of funding all of this kind of thing? Are we towards the bottom or towards the top?
Well, interestingly, we're sort of we're closer to the top in terms of our institutional funding. We're actually one of the few states that still has state mental health treatment facilities for inpatient beds, and so we put a lot of our dollars there. We're pretty close to the bottom in terms of funding community resources and focusing our efforts in that area. We might be somewhere down in the 40s.
Oh gosh, Victoria, you mentioned earlier community-based approaches to mental health. Can you give us an example of somewhere in the state or some organization that's really doing it right so we can sort of picture in our heads where we should be moving towards?
I think there are lots of great programs out there in pockets, and the Department of Mental Health has worked with our community services boards, and I don't know if your listeners are that familiar with how the system works, but the Department of Mental Health runs the state facilities and the in-bed inpatient treatment facilities, both for mental health, mental retardation, and substance abuse services. But they partner with the localities through our CSBs, our community services boards, and take a large, well, not as large as they were formerly able to do, but do try and provide funding for community-based services through those CSBs. About nine CSBs in the state have what are called PACT programs, Programs for Assertive Community Treatment. Effectively, those are evidence-based practices. In other words, they've been tried in lots of places in the United States, and they've been studied, and it turns out that they work well. And you can sort of think of them as a hospital without walls. They're for chronically, seriously, mentally ill individuals. And what they do is they allow those chronically ill individuals to live in the community, sometimes in supportive housing, sometimes independently, but with a team that helps them get through even just their day-to-day functioning. It's much less costly than a hospital bed overall, and it has a very efficacious effect in moving people with mental illness towards recovery. And when I say recovery, you know, people think of mental illness and they think, well, mental illness, once you've got mental illness, you always have mental illness, and that's really not true. Even people with severe schizophrenia can recover and remain without symptoms with the right treatment and the right things in place to support them.
We're talking with attorney Victoria Cochran, who's mental health and criminal justice partnership advocate. Can you talk a little bit about the history and the impact of deinstitutionalization of, once upon a time, didn't we just used to, anybody had a mental health problem, you just locked them away and you never saw them again. And these community-based programs you're talking about that the whole country is moving towards seem to be very, very different.
Well, it is different, and the whole deinstitutionalization movement is an interesting area, and I'm really glad you've asked that question. I guess the thing that is important to keep in mind when looking at this is, and this is a shocking figure to many people, one out of every four people, studies show, in any given year will develop a diagnosable mental disorder. One in four. And it used to be that in, you know, the 1800s, for example, if someone was different or exhibiting symptoms that we would now recognize as being mental illness, they were often shut away. And we developed a hospital system because families couldn't take care of people. Sometimes they became a burden on community, and so we tried institutionalization. Fast forward to about the 1970s, and the costs of institutionalization, both for the individuals being institutionalized and for the governments supporting institutionalization, became too costly in human and economic terms. And the goal was to remove people from expensive institutions and provide care for them at the community level because so many of them did not need institutionalization. And the problem was that while the idea was good, the resources did not follow the individuals into the community. And so what happened was, without care in the community, without the resources that people needed to be successful and actually adjust to life outside of an institutional setting where many people had been for years, what happened was there was a swing to what is sometimes referred to as cross-institutionalization or trans-institutionalization. And those folks that were not in institutional hospital settings moved to institutional jail settings as their there was lack of care in the community. Their symptoms and behaviors became frightening or disruptive in the community and sometimes dangerous.
But oftentimes they ended up down at the regional jail when they should have been more with a caregiver somewhere.
Exactly. People didn't have the ability to effectively get them into hospitals. We still have a sort of a crisis response mode that takes a long time to locate a bed to stabilize someone when if we were providing the supports to keep them stable in the community, we wouldn't need to go through that expensive and difficult crisis intervention process.
My guest is Victoria Cochran. She is chair of the State Board of Mental Health. Victoria, I got about a couple of minutes left, but I did want to ask you if you could sort of give us a quick look at some of the changes that we can expect perhaps here in Virginia as a result of tech. You know, there's a lot of bills that are already coming out of the woodwork that'll be put on the table here in January in the General Assembly. What do you think we're going to see?
I think a couple of main areas of focus. I think we've already seen an increased attention to campus security issues. And I actually think that campus safety has always been a priority for our universities and colleges, but clearly there's another look being taken at the response to that. So I think a little more latitude in institutions, educational institutions developing those kinds of planning processes, and some support for that is going to happen. I think, too, that we're going to look at our civil commitment laws and our privacy laws in ways that hopefully will be helpful to the systems, particularly with the privacy laws. You know, we have HIPAA. We have these university and educational privacy laws, and people have really, in some ways, interpreted them more broadly than they needed to, and so felt like they couldn't communicate information when sometimes they could, and sometimes the laws themselves really made communication with different agencies and actors who were impacting on the lives of individuals with mental illness very difficult. So I think we'll see some serious attention paid to that, and while still protecting an individual's rights, try and make that ability to communicate much easier and much more helpful. I think as far as the commitment laws, what we're going to be looking at a lot is more standardization. We have a set of laws, but we have a lot of localities interpreting them in different ways, and so I think there will be some tightening in that way.
Victoria Cochran is chair of the State Board of Mental Health, and she serves on the Commission on Mental Health Law Reform. Victoria, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Well, Coy, this time has gone by so quickly, and I thank you so very much for letting me have the opportunity to share this information with your listeners.
This interview will be archived in its entirety on the Charlottesville Podcasting Network at sevillepodcast.com.
You've been listening to WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To participate in the program, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This is the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, sevillepodcast.com.